Welcome back to another episode of What the HR, an award-winning podcast. I'm Jesse Novi.
And I'm Mike Toole. The What the HR podcast explores how to build people-centric businesses through modern practices and approaches. New episodes are released frequently, so don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss any episodes.
Welcome back to another episode of What the HR. Today, we're joined by Kelly Johnson, a talent executive with Fortune 30 experience who has real-world expertise in all facets of HR, including global organizational performance, leadership development, executive C-suite talent succession, recruitment, HR technology, and organizational talent management. She has worked in many different business environments for over 25 years, and she recently worked for world-renowned researcher and author Marcus Buckingham, as well as owns her own private coaching practice. Kelly has worked with clients and organizations such as Nike, Target, Walmart, Amazon, and in all business facets from HR to advertising. She completed her studies at the University of Minnesota, and she currently resides in Minnesota, where she lives with her husband and her two children. I was fortunate enough to listen to Kelly speak at an HR event that I attended a couple of months ago, and I was just so drawn to her philosophy and to her energy. I know you're also going to really feel her energy through the podcast episode today, so I'm confident you all are going to enjoy her as much as we did. The topic today for the podcast is designing work around strengths, and we cover a lot of meaty information in this episode. So I know this is one that you're going to love and one that you might find yourself going back to and listening to again, or hopefully even inspired to share it with others as well. If you are loving our podcast episodes and guests, please do me a huge favor and head out onto your favorite podcast platform. Leave us both a rating and a review. Doing both of those things helps to ensure that our podcast episodes are getting out to other HR practitioners and business leaders. And as always, enjoy the episode. All right, Kelly, well, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. For our listeners, I got to see Kelly speak a month or so ago at a local HR event. And I really resonated with her work and her delivery. So our listeners are in for a treat today, Kelly. So we're going to be talking about developing through strengths. So I'd love to hear how you got into this space and what makes you passionate about this topic.
Yeah, well, how I got into it. So as I mentioned, I've been in HR for a long time, and you know, everything back from my very, very first role in doing HR things was actually back in undergrad. I was a tour guide, and I also worked in the Office of Admissions and Undergraduate Recruitment at the University of Minnesota. And even then, I remember sort of having this gut sense that when you make a choice as in a university, which sidebar, my son is about to do. So this is come full circle now. But when even at that age, as you're trying to decide, what do I go, where do I do, that there's sort of this division of what the world thinks you should say or what you feel like you should do and sort of what your gut pulls you for. And so I even remember doing tours back then saying, listen to your gut. I mean, I'm a young, inexperienced person telling this to other young, inexperienced persons. So there was something innately in me that said, go with your gut. You know, if your dad's a lawyer, that's cool, but you don't have to be sort of a thing, you know, or just because your parent came here doesn't mean you have to. So there was sort of that uniqueness, if you will, that I was poking into and investigating all the way then. And I think that has then carried and translated through all of the roles that I've had. It became really, really apparent, the strengths component by name, when I started doing coaching. And so I've got my coaching certifications, gosh, over 15 years ago. And that's where I really got interested in tapping into this component in each individual to really maximize their decision making and who they are.
Yeah. I would have loved for you to have been my tour guide.
Yes.
My university tour guide. You have the best personality for that.
It was so fun. I can still walk backwards if you need me to.
So when you were going through your intro, you were talking about all of the different areas that you've worked in HR. It sounds like you've pretty much done it all, with maybe the exception of like comp and benefits.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Impact, but not my specialty. Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. So based on all of the experiences that you've had and all the different roles and teams that you've been a part of, how do you feel most companies are doing development today? Like, you know, are they doing it the right way or the wrong way? And if the answer is maybe they could be doing it better, what do you believe they should change?
Yeah. It's such a good question, and probably one, like, if I think about, we could build a full scale, and I have full scale strategies based on that question. For me, when I look at it, oftentimes as HR practitioners, we talk about the talent cycle, the talent ecosystem. And I actually think it starts even as early as the first time you log in and look at an organization. What do you see in their values? How are they recruiting? How are they talking about their jobs? You know, oftentimes when you look even at a job description, you're looking at tasks. And I have seen job descriptions written as, what do you love to do? Do you love da 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 da? Or my favorites are the ones where they say, hey, here's what a week looks like. I think, honestly, the development of people begins all the way in talent acquisition, of how we state our values, what is that job description look like, into, you know, if you're interviewing me, Jesse, for a job, not just saying, can Kelly do this, but saying, Do you even enjoy this? Is this where you're going to enjoy even spending your time, to make sure that we bring in the right people where they're going to be spending their time in areas that they have energy? And so I can tell you, I think it falls in every single aspect of talent management. So as we think about recruitment into really, you know, everyday IDPs, as we think of traditional development, that sort of 70-20-10 rule, putting it into our weekly work, putting it into making sure we can develop against it. So even when we think about performance, are we doing more feedback or more feed forward? And I think it fits that whole life cycle. And then I'll end with even succession. So then even as you grow through your career, oftentimes when we look even at succession plans, and I'm sure most people listening have had some sort of a touch into that. I mean, I've seen ones where we've got full like report cards with people against competencies. Oh, Kelly Johnson's red on this, yellow on this, red on this. Where are we spending our time? Where this person is yellow and red, throwing them into stretch assignments where they don't have skills or passion. I mean, a lot of it is backwards. So much of it is backwards to me.
So, and with those stretch assignments, do you think it's backwards because they're putting them into buckets that their weaknesses are aligned? Versus,
they can. And yeah. I think that's where candor and conversation come in, because I might have a weakness right now, Michael. Let's pick something. Let's say I wanted to be a better public speaker, and it is a weakness of mine, but in conversation, because you asked me and we're getting curious, Kelly, what do you love? What do you loathe? What gives you energy? You know, it is an area of interest of me. I am interested in doing it. That would be a great stretch assignment. Right. But if you come to me and say, Kelly, and real life, Jesse's heard me talk about this. If you say, oh, Kelly, you're not great at budgeting, which I am not. Kelly Johnson does not have a math brain. I was responsible for, you know, $19 million budget. I needed to learn, you know, some more basics around accounting and finance and budgets. And I was responsible for that. Should you make me the budget captain for the entire HR team? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's nowhere I want to grow. I do not have interest in it. It's a weakening experience for me. And so we want to get me up to competency, but stretch assignments should really, in my mind, be the areas that we want to grow, where we do have passion, where we are contributing. And it might even be something that, frankly, you're kind of good at already, because we'll grow more in that area. So it's okay. The balance, I would say, bottom line in that one is, it's okay to grow in your areas of weakness, because you need to for your job. But if you really want to maximize somebody's growth in something where you would dedicate something like, oh my goodness, we're going to make this a whole part of your job, or even an assignment, we really should be doing that more in alignment with people's strengths.
Yeah. And I imagine that comes through conversation, because there may be things that you're very good at, but you don't really care to do it.
Yes.
Right. So you don't want to be pushed into buckets where it's like, you know, they see you as somebody who's very good at compensation, but maybe you hate it. You're just naturally good at it.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So that, I guess that's helpful, because when I think about it, you talk about getting you up to competency. So there, when we're talking about this, it's when it comes to, we're not ignoring weaknesses, but we're not necessarily focused entirely on making somebody exceptional within those weaknesses.
Yes. Yes. And this is, I just want to give a nod. So I had the pleasure, and Jesse shared this with my bio, but I had the pleasure of working for and learning from a researcher named Marcus Buckingham. So most of the things, as I talk about strengths, as I talk about the research, this is his research, not mine. And that's really what he studied, is really looking at the world's highest performing, most highly engaged teams. And it comes back again and again to what you were just saying, Michael, which is having that person innately identify, the words that Marcus uses are appetite and ability. Appetite and ability. So I can see your ability to do something, right? If the three of us work together on a team, I go, oh my gosh, Michael's so good at that. We, Jesse and I, can see that in you. We can't index your appetite. And this is where this, that teeter works that you were just saying, is makes that distinction between what Marcus will call a skill, which is absolutely something Jesse and I can see. You do it very well. You're absolutely above average. But we're going to identify a strength as an activity that makes you feel strong. And that's where the appetite, it's not only something you're good at, but you have that innate feeling inside of you.
Yeah. As well. Yeah. Be a strange question, I guess, but does it have to be work related? When we think about like increasing somebody's, not self-worth, but just elevating somebody, some of that appetite, it may come from things outside that aren't necessarily
absolutely
role. So is it a company's responsibility to facilitate that? And, or is it something you've seen companies help facilitate just in general effect of that human who happens to work at their company? And does that lead to better results?
Ooh, such a juicy question. And I'd love to hear what the two of you think. So when you first started asking the question, I thought you were asking, and I'll still answer this. When we talk about loves and loathes and strengths versus weaknesses, you know, versus sort of skills, does it have to do with whole life or work? It is whole life. So as we think about the way you spend your time and the things that each of us enjoy doing, we absolutely have those things in our private life where the things we love, things we loathe. And we should try to design our life around that. Asking if a company has responsibility to tap into the wholeness of us, I guess my equalizer kind of comes into play. And I would say, I don't know that they do have a responsibility. I'd be curious to what the two of you or your listeners think about that. But I, Kelly Johnson, believe that I want to know the wholeness of the people that work with me. So that's my choice as a leader, as a coworker, as a partner, and as somebody who cares about you. And truly as a leader who has dedicated her life to this work. And as I mentor people, as I even listen, you know, to friends or my coaching clients, I find that there's a lot of transfer between life and work, that there's a lot of things that connect that that do play in. And the more you understand the whole person, I think the more clues it gives you to what their best self looks like.
Yeah.
What do you two think about that?
I couldn't agree more with what you just said. I don't think it's a responsibility of an employer, but I think that you're going to have a lot more of an engaged team or an engaged workforce when those people are aligned to managers like yourself, Kelly, that are asking those questions and getting to know their people better and knowing what fills up their cup outside and inside work.
Yeah.
Well, it changed too from when we started going more remote. If you looked at 10 years ago, people started putting gyms in the offices and whatnot, like to promote that stuff. And then we went remote. And we kind of now go with like this work-life balance and kind of work-life integration, you'll hear people call it. But I haven't seen a lot of people or leaders kind of sit down and say, hey, okay, we were saying, I love golf, right? You love golf. So I want you to put time on your calendar during the week to focus on that. Or somebody loves whatever it is that they love. And so that's what I'm wondering from a leader perspective, because that's outside of work, but it helps to kind of bring your best self to work as well.
Mm-hmm.
They used to try to do that kind of in the office. Hey, you're on site. Let's let's bring in foosball tables, all this stuff. But now when everybody works at home, there's not really a focus on it.
Mm-hmm. I think too, that when I think about, oftentimes I'll talk about, with my coaching clients, I'll talk about energy. The three of us, we each have so much energy in a day. And as we think about how that's depleted, each day looks a little different. Nobody gets to do only things they love all day, every day. It's unrealistic and not something a manager, an organization, or even an individual should strive for. But if we think about the limited amount of energy that we have, oftentimes what I'll talk to my coaching clients about is, how do we make sure that you have a nice balance? So to use your golf example, if you and I were on the same team, and I know that your energy right now, through questions, the things that I'm asking you, is kind of low, right? You're just giving a lot in an energy in an area that maybe doesn't feel like a strength to you. It's a lot of give. That's where that whole life part might come in, where I say, okay, Michael, you're cutting out early on Friday. What is something, you know, like, you do whatever you want to do, but thank you so much for your contributions this week. And what might be something that you do to refill that energy for yourself or refill that cup? And I do think that's where this whole concept of work-life balance comes in, because this is a controversial statement, and I actually have had people repeat this back to me and like, you said, I did say this. I don't believe in balance. It doesn't mean I don't strive for it, but I will tell you, as a person that owns her own coaching and consulting firm, a full-time worker, you know, I do that on nights and weekends. Then I work full-time for an organization. And then I'm also a mom. I'm a volunteer. I'm all these things. Every single day, I'm making choices. I make choices. That's what I do. And if you think there's balance, then it's like, quick, freeze your whole life. Because it's the second you move, something will change. Someday, I am one heck of a mom. Someday I am one heck of a mentor. Someday my house is super clean, but usually all of those things are not true, and we make choices. And so as I think about the energy we have to give, you know, thinking about and tapping into your whole life can be a nice way that gives you that ability to show up at your best every day. So you get that balance wherever you might need it. I need a little more of this, or I need a little less of that.
So, I mean, we're talking in relation to kind of energy in this perspective, like the person. So now if we shift to kind of back to the workforce, like, can you explain how kind of focusing on these strengths like impacts maybe productivity? I don't know if you've done research on that, but like generally speaking, when you sit down with somebody and you talk about these strengths or these stretch assignments versus their weaknesses, like, how is that shown up to the CEO of a company?
Absolutely. Yes, there is research on this. If anybody wants to look at it, you could go to ADPRI, the ADP Research Institute, and there is quite a lot of research that Marcus Buckingham has done with the ADP Research Institute on this. And there are graphics. There's all kinds of really great things that you can snag and use to talk about this in your organization. But the research does show that your highest engaged employees are your highest performing. And the way that they do that is they set, they do a lot of measurements along the way to measure productivity, along with what they call a check-in conversation. And then it can actually look team by team by team to see that performance. What the research shows is that the highest engaged, highest performing team members are the ones who are paying the highest attention to the very best in them. And that happens through those leader conversations. So if you're my leader, Michael, it looks like these quick conversations that are happening that are focusing on strengths, putting the best of me into the work as frequently as possible. And so the more frequent the conversations, the higher the engagement, the higher performance. So it is all tied, and there's some really, really cool research there if anybody wants to check that out. But it is there. And it makes sense. When you think about the most productive, the happiest that you've been, it's rare that I talk to people where they're not leveraging their strengths.
Can you give a quick real life example of that, Kelly? So a manager is listening to this podcast and they're like, okay, I meet with a direct report once a week or once every other week. Right now, my agenda with that team member is like, you know, it's their time. They bring forth things that they need from me. We might talk about what's going on for the week, anything I might need from them, check in with them, see how things are going, what they need from me, and then we move on.
Yes.
So what's missing in that could be finessed or improved to increase engagement and all of the other things that you've talked about?
Yeah. The neat part just is in what you said. I do think most people are doing. So acknowledgement of that. There are some small tweaks that this body of research that I've been talking about points at. And the one thing I would tell you is that if you look sort of at the tone of a lot of those conversations, and this is not intentional, I truly don't believe this is intentional, the human being's kind of left out. Right? You think you sit down with your boss and they say, what are you working on? How's that going? Where are you at with this? What's the number? What are you going to do? It is work, 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 work. And what this body of research suggests is that you also ask these questions of what do you love this week? What did you loathe? You know, and so back to, you know, that concept we were talking about before around energy, asking those couple questions and getting more into, you know, did you have an opportunity to use your strengths this week? That's one of the very specific questions that Marcus encourages organizations to use. Starts posing into the human being doing the work. That's the distinction, is that my recommendation, having seen this methodology that he recommends really, really work, is that keep all those things you're talking about the work, add the human in, because it is the human that's going to quit on you. It's the human that's going to burn out. It's the human that loves or loathes the work that you can't see. Remember when we were talking about appetite or ability? So I might sit here with Michael, and this is very, very, very natural, and say, what are you working on? Where's the progress in? And Michael, going into his human, and I'm going to call it as a coach, approved brain, because I want to look good to my boss. Here's where I'm at. Here's where I'm at. Da, da, da. Thanks so much. Goodbye. And I'm running out the door and he's running out the door. It's very, very rare that he would say, by the way, I'm having a really hard time this week, or this task was really depleting for me. Most people are not going to say things like that. And so we have to ask and we have to listen and actually show compassion to build that trust, to get those people to open up to us, because that's where the truth of this person's performance really lies, is in how they feel about the work, where their engagement is with the work.
Have you ever had a situation where the employee doesn't know how to answer the love piece?
Yes.
And yeah. How do you work through that with them?
Yeah. So oftentimes people will come back and sort of say, you know, this language you're using. And I've seen people ask this to Marcus directly, you know, this love, this loathes, these are such strong, strong, strong words. You know, what are your thoughts on this? The reason why those words are used is because they give you range. If I sort of ask you something in the neutral area, like, hey, how's it going? You're going to give me neutral answers. I learn most about you in those ranges of real love or loathe. And myself, you know, I had a wonderful boss in my last role, and she would ask me weekly, what did you love? What did you loathe? I don't always have a love. I don't always have a loathe. So it's okay. You know, you don't have to have one every week. But when you sort of go back and reflect, oftentimes it is those bigger things. And so that's the first thing I always say to people is, you don't have to have one, first of all. You might sort of had like a, yep, I got stuff done this week. But what I often will tell people is, I'll say to leaders, the first time somebody comes back to you, so Jesse, if you're my boss, or Michael, you're my boss, and I said, ooh, I really disliked task A. And you come back at me and go, well, that is part of your job. I am never telling you anything again. You literally just said, I'm not going to. So I would often train leaders to say that first one, that first big one that they confide in you, it their threat responses are up. You know, use the Neuro Leadership Institute, you know, David Rock's work. Look at your SCARF assessment. What makes your threat response go up? For a lot of people, it's things like status. So that boss saying to you, really? That's part of your job. I am never telling you anything again. So you have to, as a leader, be willing to listen. Tell me more about that. How is that draining for you? Is that something you think you can get by? You know, I've even said myself to my own team, you know, you're not going to love everything you do every week, but how can we maybe have offset that? So I think that trust is a huge part of it, Jesse, is making sure that that leader is listening and that they understand that I'm not asking you these questions because I'm looking for what's wrong with you. I'm asking these questions because I want to understand what your best looks like. So if something's weakening to you, I need to know.
I'm glad you said that example of like, hey, that's just your job. Because one of the questions I had is, there are certain things that everybody hates doing. And even your manager may say, hey, I get it, but you have to do it because up the chain of command, we have to do it. So what's a better response in your opinion, instead of, hey, it just has to get done, even though that may be truly how you're feeling,
but
to your point, right? It may not land very well. So is there a better approach that you would recommend?
Well, I always think compassion is the way to go in general, right? In life. And I think looking at each human being as unique. So I've taken the standout assessment. Jesse took the standout assessment as well as Michael. And Jesse and I share a top role, which is the teacher role. The teacher role is sort of obsessed with the uniqueness in every individual. And so the approach that I take, Michael, is very much a one of curiosity and compassion. And I would encourage any leader, regardless of what your strength roles or what you're passionate about, to think about that, because don't you want to understand the person across from you to understand, well, what part of that is hard for you, or what don't you like about it, or how much time is that taking you? I mean, get curious. This is where Coach Kelly starts to show up. Ask lots of questions is my recommendation if you're uncomfortable as a leader, to better understand, well, yeah, what about it, or what does it feel like? What part of that is draining for you? Have you tried, you know, something else? Or, you know, there's lots of things we can learn. And the second part about that I would say is, I do believe, having spent the better part of 15 years studying leadership development and coaching, that most leaders believe they are responsible for fixing things. Yeah. I think they think they're there to fix, and you're actually not. Jesse, what are you thinking? I see your
reaction. I was just going to say that. I was going to be like, yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily a leader thing or just a human thing. Like,
you know,
you're even sitting with like a colleague, or you guys are peers and they share something, and I have to be careful with it with my daughter. When she brings something to me, I've gotten to a habit of saying, do you just need to vent right now, or do you need my advice? You know, and asking for clarity, because you should never go into those conversations with anybody assuming. And I don't think that the intent of what you're suggesting here with the love and the loathe conversation is to try to fix it. It is to be curious. And certainly with the love piece, and with the topic that we're talking about today, it is to see what I can do as a leader to give more love opportunities and less loathe opportunities. But it isn't to fix it all or take away all the loathes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we can't. Unfortunately, that's not our life experiences as humans. And, you know, you think about it as a parent, as a coach, as a manager, we can't remove 100% of the things that each person has a negative reaction to. But what we can do is try to understand their experiences in that and then offset it. So that's where we get to be creative and ask for their creativity. How might you do this differently? Or what do you imagine we can do to help you get them in here to help problem solve?
I think about, like, from an employee perspective and how they can help facilitate this. Like, we do an HR podcast, and a lot of things we talk about is helping HR people to now implement in their day-to-day. And then we got to remember that they're also people that need the same sort of help in certain areas. So, like, from an employee perspective, how do they take ownership of maybe they're listening to this and say, you know, I'd like to have these conversations with my leaders about myself. Mm-hmm. Like, we talk a lot about the onus, it seems to always fall on middle management, but it kind of takes, you know, two people for these things to work. So, like, from an employee perspective, how can they approach maybe this subject internally, where maybe they are focusing on weaknesses and they want to start talking about their strengths more and taking on certain assignments that, you know, use their strengths versus fixing weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think so. I will tell you, you know, I have four different kinds of coaching certifications. And the first one that I went to, there's probably many listeners and maybe even one of the two of you who have gone to the Coach Training Institute. So it's called CTI. And one of the things that CTI teaches all of its coaches, that I'm a huge, huge, huge believer in this, is they say every person that you encounter is naturally creative, resourceful, and whole. Naturally creative, resourceful, and whole. And so our goal as individuals, whether I'm an employee, a parent, a friend, is to look at every person and go, they are naturally creative, resourceful, and whole, meaning they can solve their own problems. They are capable of doing this. They are, you know, are wildly imaginative and can do a lot of things. I think where people start to get suffocated is when they stop believing that in themselves, or we stop believing that of others. So I think it starts with, as an individual, because unless you are you know, the CEO, which even the CEO rolls up to the board in most cases, you have somebody you are accountable for, your stakeholders, your stockholders, you know, your partners, whoever that is, we all roll up to somebody. So you kind of say, I think we owe it to say, how do I contribute my best? And I honestly think that starts inside of ourselves. Yeah. I think it starts with reflection. I think it starts with paying attention. You know, we talked about that energy sort of thing, is what gives me energy? What drains energy for me? I was reading a book called Design Your Best Life, and they talk about energy like a gas tank. Like, what are things that give me, you know, feel like, oh, you just fueled my tank. I make up that the two of you do this because it is fueling for you. This is something that fuels your energy. And then what are the things that are just totally depleting for me, right? And so paying attention to those. And so I think it does start first and foremost with accountability. I get a little annoyed when I hear people going, well, my boss hasn't promoted me. And I will start with, and I will get annoyed when people just sort of sit and wait and they think it's like duck, duck, goose or duck, duck, gray duck, wherever you come from in the world, you know, just sort of like, I'm just going to put my head down, my thumbs up, and I'm waiting. No, friend, no, friend, no, friend. You have to be accountable inside yourself and do your own self-work. And there are so many things that you can do, whether that's a conversation with a friend, a conversation with somebody who cares for you, journaling, paying, you know, kind of that gas tank thing. What gives me energy? And then I think it's sharing it. So I think it starts with insight. Insight and accountability starts with me. And then you communicate that, whether that's to your life partner, whether that's to your children, whether that's to your leader, to say, here's what I love to do. Here's a contribution, and contribution is one of my favorite words. Here's a contribution I would like to make here. Put it out there. We can't, I think, as team members, sit back, head down, and just wait to be tapped. Leaders are not mind readers. For as much as they would love to know their teams, and I really do feel like they want to, they can't know. And so I think that accountability starts within each of us, no matter what level you're at.
Yeah. And those folks that are heads down, thumbs up, are probably your biggest flight risk.
Yes.
Too, you know, yes. And so as a leader, any good leader wants to know who their flight risks are and what they can do to keep them engaged. So yeah, you're doing yourself a massive disfavor by not speaking up and communicating what you want out of your career. I think some people do it out of fear of like, well, what if that position isn't available, or what might my leader think about me? And I think you just have to put the fear and any risk associated with that conversation aside and really ask yourself, what's worse, sitting around and waiting versus maybe hearing an answer I don't want to hear, or determining that that position that I want isn't at the company that I currently work for.
Yeah. And that vulnerability that you're naming, Jesse, is so real. You know, when we do put our most vulnerable self out there, that fear of rejection or being seen for something that maybe isn't valued, that's tough. I mean, that is tough, and the risks are there. But I like where your head's going, because I would go, well, where is the risk greater? In walking a life that's sort of a you know, dry piece of toast, you know, no flavor, no peanut butter, no jelly. Like, what do you want? You got to tell me. You know, maybe I'm over here giving you chunky peanut butter and you are a strawberry jam all the way kind of person. I can't know that unless you tell me. And so then you just stay dry toast. Like, that's not fun. That's not why you're here. I want to know what you want. And I can't possibly know that unless you tell me.
And not all leaders are good at what we're talking about either. Most are not good about coming forward and engaging. So if you're listening and you have a leader who is all business and all agenda during your one-on-ones, and they aren't asking you about your development, just carve, it's your time. Maybe send them a message in advance and be like, hey, I want to talk about my career today, so that they're prepared coming in for that conversation.
And I would say you could even weave it in a way that's a little bit slyer than that. So you can definitely say, and I'm a big believer that I want to talk about my development. Please do everything Jesse just said. And if you've tried, we're going to go here. We're going to go to the dark side. You've tried and your boss is like, rah, rah, rah. If you have done your work to know what contribution you want to make, you now look at your goals. And so we'll say, Michael's my boss in this. So then I come and I know my boss is all business. So I'll say, and a contribution I can make, Michael, to help us get to this percentage in sales is, I'm now telling him my contribution, what I want to do, and make him say no. You weave it into this growth, this area that you want to do something. You tell them how it's going to work. So you don't have to say, for my development or because I want to get promoted. You say, I want to make this contribution. So like a real life example of that was when I really, really, really wanted, I was so interested in coaching. And I was fortunate, it's a longer story, but I was fortunate enough to get supported to do some coaching classes. But my goal was to do it at work. I did not have the bandwidth to actually start doing, you know, nights and weekends. I had a newborn little kid, you know, all the stuff. It was at that time I couldn't do nights and weekends. And so I said, hey, we need to grow. We've got this leadership development program here, and I will do some of the free coaching. You just slide that right in there. Yes, I will. Or I will mentor at least 3 people in HR who are up and comers. I wanted to do that. I love mentoring. Nobody's saying no. Weave it into how it's going to help the business, and put those right in there. You have to be creative, and that's part of being accountable.
Yeah, those are great examples, Kelly. Say it louder so the people in back can hear.
Just try it.
So what do you think, you know, knowing, Kelly, that you've seen a lot of organizations or leaders just in general, I won't make a blanket statement about this being necessarily like a corporate company issue, but probably more like a leader to leader issue, can do tomorrow. You know, as I'm thinking about my HR folks that are listening to this, that are in roles that are business facing, and they're working to coach their leaders to help create more engagement, help get people, right people aligned to right role, maybe are currently working on talent assessments or succession planning right now and are thinking about how can we do this a little bit better for the future. Now, granted, I know this is like I'm asking you to boil the ocean here, but, you know, if you could give just a few kind of nuggets, that would be helpful for them to consider.
So if I put myself in the chair of, I'm just going to say like an HR generalist, right? And I'm sitting here, it's my job every single day to support the business to create higher business outcomes, right? A lot of times, let's be real, for all of us who have been generalists, it is emergency after problem after emergency after problem. We got all the good stuff we want to do, but a lot of things come up. And I do think that we can become a little jaded sometimes as HR practitioners, because reality is we hear about a lot of problems. Give this person feedback, work this person out. I mean, it can be really heavy sometimes. My encouragement for you is dig your heels in, my friends, and make a commitment to really thinking and having that lens, a perspective, and it is a choice around positive psychology. So whether you're looking at Barbara Fredrickson's work or Pete Berridge, who wrote a really great book called Shift Positive, Standout 2.0, 9 Lies About Work, Marcus's a book. Think about how can we solve these problems looking at the best in people. And so I think as an HR practitioner, here's some real examples. People would come to me and they'd say, well, this person is a problem and I'm going to need you to give them feedback. First of all, no. Second of all, no. So one of the things that I started doing very naturally, and this is actually after I read Barbara Fredrickson's book, she talks a lot about perspective, or Carol Dweck, mindset, if you've ever read that. And so I would encourage you to choose a positive lens. So in a situation like that, this person needs feedback. I would first start with, what did you communicate with them? What are they doing well? Is this a style? I can't tell you how many times people have wanted to give feedback and it's stylistic feedback. They're getting it done. It's just not the way that manager would do it themselves. That's an issue. Okay. So when we look at people as naturally creative, resourceful, and whole, you give them the goal and you let them do it in their own way. So let that go. So I would really encourage people first and foremost to read some of these books and be aware of the mindset that they're carrying when they're going into these conversations. Make sure we're looking at style and substance and making sure we're allowing room for people to do work and be in existence in their own way. And then I would even look at the practices that you have. So for instance, one of the things that we talked about is succession planning. Where are your practices actually reinforming and reinforcing brokenness? So sometimes in the ecosystem, we are making it worse on purpose. If you are a heavy, heavy, heavy feedback culture, you have removed the positive psychology away from your team and you are literally reinforcing and putting people in threat response every single day. Threat response. I've been in an organization before where people are like, you know what we should do? We should get this app. And I'm sorry if whoever created it is listening, but there was some app that came out a couple of years ago where they said every single meeting you go into, you've got everybody's name in the meeting and you literally give them feedback at the end of the meeting. I will never go to a meeting again, ever. I'm not going. You're going to rate me? You pick up that phone while I'm talking? I might pass out, crawl under the table and die. Like, please don't. Like, don't put your brain in threat response. So look at the practices. What are you doing that's reinforcing this and putting people in threat? They do not perform at their best when we're in threat. Succession planning. How do we look at, you know, yeah, maybe we have our competency model, which is a whole nother conversation. But, you know, you're red, yellow, greening people. When we do development, I should be talking about, you know, what are the things on here that I can double down on and help this person soar more with their strengths than constantly course correcting where they're weak. So I think we have to look at practices, and I really think that we have to choose a positive psychology lens when we go to these conversations.
So love that. I would imagine one of the first steps is to understand the strengths of your team. Yeah. And assessments, like how should people go about doing that?
There are a ton of assessments out there. I mean, there's so many things that point at styles and strengths. I mean, there's many, many things you can use. Everything from, you know, Strength Finder, Standout, HBDI, DISC. I mean, like, there's so many things out there people can use. So I use whatever in your organization that you're using. You absolutely can do that. And I would say spend more time focusing on the best of people than the worst. So that would be number one. Number two is stop taking the human beings you're talking about out of the talent planning conversations. Like, if you really want to do that, I should be asking Michael. I can ask you. So if you want to know my strengths, I should not be over here having a private conversation with Jesse about you. We can. And then I should go, Jesse and I really think the world of you and we want to grow and develop you. What do you feel like are your strengths? How can we help you grow? What? We have to figure it out. We should include you in this. So ask the person. So you certainly can use assessments, which can be really, really helpful. Please tap into the actual human beings versus like rating them on the side and not involving them. They know. Yeah. They know.
Yeah.
It also goes back to the, you didn't use the word will. What was the word you used earlier? Not will, but
appetite.
Yeah, it was appetite. Yeah, I always use will, but I like appetite as well. But when you miss out on having the conversation with the person, you're missing out on the appetite or the will piece.
Exactly. Well. You can't know. And then suddenly we've got Michael over here and something we thought he would love, and he is like literally emotionally dying a slow and painful death over here doing something that he absolutely hates, but to the world he looks like he's good at it, so we hope he just sucks it up and does well. No.
Yeah, and I think as an employee they want to take these assessments too. Like we talked about that, like I like doing them. I find out stuff about myself. Mm-hmm. And I think just even that simple thing of saying we're trying to understand your strengths, whether it's to your point talking to them or doing an assessment, you're already moving in the right direction, right? Yeah. From a kind of, that's kind of the first point of it. Like I think if people are listening and they're saying, gosh, we've never even asked these questions, like that seems like a good first step. And then from there you would recommend just like
put it in the work. Yeah, I often will say that to my coaching clients is after we spend time just talking about strengths and weaknesses, and to be honest, you know, I've had conversations with people as recently as this year, and I'm talking about people in their 50s and 60s. So this is not somebody who's 15 that's just learning about themselves, who have looked me in the eye and said, I don't think I have any strengths. So it can take time to talk, to teach people, especially depending on their life experiences and things they've been through, to help remind them what does that feel like? What does it look like? So some people will take longer than others. So give your team time, whether that is an assessment or just, you know, time on their own, answering or journaling, paying attention to what gives them energy. Do that first. Then it is put it into their work. So, you know, a lot of people in leadership development will talk about the 70-20-10 rule, the 70% being that we want your growth and development primarily to be in the job that you're doing. And so, you know, a coach approach to that would be, Michael, if you're my boss, you're saying, okay, Kelly, one of the things that you love to do is help see the best in people. So you tell me two ways you're going to do that in your work week this week. How are you, and so then it's on me to say, I can actually do that in a peer meeting that I have, because I'm going to encourage these two people that I'm working with on this tough project we're going, because I actually know what contributions they're making. And then actually, I'm going to do it out in the wild as well. So I might, you know, do some spotting at Home Depot or something and tell people, you know, that I appreciate them. So that might be my two ways for the week. So just practicing. That's how we get better and better and better at something, by paying attention to it in real life. It doesn't grow on an IDP. I'm not anti-IDP, but it's not even worth your time if you're not doing it in real life.
Yeah, and so many IDPs in my experience live outside of everything else you're doing. They're outside of your performance goals. They're out, you know, it's kind of like this little thing on the side that people don't end up talking about. And if it was weaved into everything else, it would feel so much more valuable and contribute to everything that we've talked about in our conversation.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Yes. So we'll have to have you come back and talk competencies in the future.
Oh, I spent years of my life in conference rooms talking about competency models. So I'd be happy to. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we should. That's a topic we haven't talked about yet, and one that I think is highly controversial. And I love talking about highly controversial topics. So
yeah.
Well, let's wrap up by letting everybody know, Kelly, where they can find you, connect with you, any work you might be doing that you want to give a shout out to.
Oh, I so appreciate that. I am. You can find me at KellyJohnsonCoaching@gmail.com. I'm on LinkedIn, Kelly Johnson. And I love talking to people, meeting new people. So any you want to talk about this stuff, I'd be happy to brainstorm with you. Brainstorming is one of my loves. I love, love, love brainstorming. And I will say, too, there's this acknowledgement, you know, we're talking kind of big scale, you know, do this, don't do that. But every organization is different. And so I guess that's one of the things that I would wrap by saying is look at the strengths of your organization. What's working really, really well for you? Keep doing that or do more of that. But try to add that in, you know. So that's my shout out as we close is look at the best, look at what you're already doing well, do more of that. And then just pay a little bit more attention, you know, to strengths and all that good stuff. And then as far as like books and resources and things like that I've mentioned, I do really, really love Pete Berridge's Shift Positive work. So if you're an organization that's always given negative feedback, look at Pete's work. TMBC.com stands for the Marcus Buckingham Company.com has all of the things we were talking about, from assessments to check-in, engagement, performance. There's a really nice way of looking at that. I love Barbara Fredrickson's work. And of course, Brene Brown's, we also mentioned on vulnerability. So those are all places to go and dig deeper.
Yeah. Thank you for rattling those off again, because I know you weaved them into a few of your responses, and people were might be driving or, you know, doing their laundry or something and not catch it. So thank you for listing those again. And as far as your consulting work goes, Kelly, are you usually doing like one-on-one clients? Do you work with companies, both?
Yeah. Well, and I was, my past position was I was working for Marcus Buckingham. So that's where I learned so much and have grown, but that actually just ended. And so I'm looking for a full-time gig. And so I'm looking for my home family, if anybody knows of anything. But yeah, I mean, I do it, but for me, it's much, much smaller scale, you know, but one-on-one coaching or, you know, some smaller consulting. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you all heard it here. Kelly is available and somebody should hire her fast because she's great. So thank you, Kelly. Really appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you. You too. And just a shout out. We before this, we started recording, I'll say I got to see this in my experience with both of you using your strengths. And what a blessing to the people who get to listen is watching the two of you do something that gives you energy. It's very cool to witness. So thank you for including me in your passions. I appreciate it.
That's really nice. Thank you.
Yeah.